president of Emerson Hospital, is being interviewed by Renee Garlick for Concord's Oral History on March 13, 2001. The challenges of administering a community hospital are very daunting at this point, at the beginning of a new century, and we probably should not take its existence for granted.
Right. It is a difficult time for hospitals. Emerson, along with many hospitals in Massachusetts and around the country, but particularly acute in Massachusetts, has been under tremendous financial stress. Big Medicare cuts in 1998, which have continued on through 2001, about as far as the eye can see right now. And very low payments from the HMOs have combined to put us in a situation where our costs are not being fully covered by insurers, the cost of providing care, nursing care, and drugs, and supplies, and insurance, and all the other things to think of that goes into the cost of providing care to our community. Communities, about 20 counties that we serve, including Concord. We're slowly digging our way out. We're in the black so far this year through February. February, about 10 months ago. So we're doing better, but it's still been very tough, and it's very much month to month at this point in terms of whether we're in the black or the red. We did in the last year, I think I can say now successfully, took a group of physicians and some practice associates that was losing the hospital a lot of money, requiring a lot of subsidies in the hospital to keep them afloat. About 30 physicians, 33 actually, mostly internists and pediatricians, but sprinkled in some other specialties as well, in towns all around here, not just in Concord, but in Westford and Bedford and several other towns, Lexington, and helped those groups go independent. We've only lost three doctors out of 30-something who said they had to have a salary. They didn't get a salary, didn't want to go into private practice. So that's good news. We've managed to transition those practices, I think, successfully. They're going to stay in town, and in these various towns, they're going to keep on using Emerson, and they're going to be self-reliant. They're going to have to be.
When did Emerson Practice Associates begin, and could you explain the thinking behind its introduction?
It started about 10 or 11 years ago.
Before you came?
Before I came.
Yeah.
It grew before I came and while I was here, because there was a growing feeling that hospitals needed to, it grew out of fear as much as anything else. Every hospital was worried that other ones were gonna buy up their primary care physicians. And there was a great premium on primary care. With more and more HMO medicine, the feeling was the key to being successful with as many primary care physicians as possible, that they would drive the system, they'd be the cornerstones of it. There's been a growing trend in the exact opposite direction in the last 4 or 5 years of people wanting to go directly to specialists, relying less on primary care. The health plans have become more liberal about allowing subscribers go directly to specialists. So the unique value of primary care diminished somewhat. Also, the practices throughout the country have been almost uniformly very hard to make profitable. Or let me put it differently, to not lose money. We never sought to make a profit. We wanted merely to cover the cost of employing these folks, or at least even to have a loss that was small, which we probably could have sustained over a long period of time, but the losses were large. So we in many hospitals, I hate to say it, in retrospect, kind of went through the same frenzy in the 90s and came out the other end saying, we can't impoverish the core operation of the hospital in the form of what amounts to subsidies to physician groups. If a practice can't earn enough money to pay a certain salary to a doctor, then the doctor's salary is going to have to go down, and the doctor cannot be looking into the hospital to guarantee a salary. Their productivity is dictating a salary of $80,000, but they want us to pay them only $130,000 or something. We can't be making up that difference year after year. We also found that physicians, you know, I think maybe you can generalize from this, but physicians certainly are no exception to the notion that, like, if you own something, you care more about it, and you work just a little bit harder than if you know, you're clocking at 9 to 5. And I'm exaggerating, but only slightly, but, you know, we needed to change the culture, and we tried to change it with small little tweakings of our compensation system for the doctors, and found that didn't work. And we finally decided to do this. We'll help you get started if you've got to go on to private practice. We'll give you a soft land and we'll make it as easy a transition as we can. It was quite expensive for the hospital to fund that transition, but it was well worth it because the method those doctors stayed in town. Mm-hmm. They didn't just give up all hope and, you know, start looking at what was, you know, what was available in Phoenix or something, which could have been disastrous for us if we had a wholesale exodus of doctors out of our town. So that's the situation there, and you know, those doctors are busy, and a couple of other good things going on right now. Concord Hillside, a long-standing group in town, has just left Leahy and gone independent again, which means it's just not quite official yet, but we'll be shortly. And that means that Emerson will be getting back some of the business that has been slowly trickling out to Leahy. They've been using Emerson for most of their services, but they've been sending each year a little bit more stuff away, and that should all be coming back. And they're recruiting 4 new doctors to come into both Bedford and the Concord, which will be very good in terms of strengthening the primary care physician base again back away here in town, which is important.
I know we both woke up to a Boston Globe feature today about teaching hospitals in Boston taking away a greater market share, at least from some communities.
Right. I mean, I just met with our whole medical staff at the regular meeting the other day and commended that article to them because I thought it was a fascinating article, but also was happy to tell them that we've not been one of those hospitals that's lost market share. In fact, we've seen small but real gains over the last couple of years, each of the last couple of years. What's interesting is that the most interesting fact in there, without spending a lot of time in the article, is that in Massachusetts, about 40% of hospital admissions go to teaching hospitals versus 18% nationally. So people use teaching hospitals much more in Massachusetts than anywhere else in the country. Not a surprise, since there's such a concentration of them in Massachusetts. But it does increase the cost of care, because teaching hospitals are always going to be more expensive than community hospitals. They have the additional mission of teaching a whole new cadre of physicians. These physicians are less expensive, and that gets reflected in the charges that they have, the cost of things like. You know, Emerson always struggles with that. There are always going to be people who leave our area to go downtown, but we've held our own better than most. And our relationship with the Mass General and the Brigham, the lease one, we're not owned by them in any way, but we're affiliated with them. It has resulted in the Cancer Center that we've jointly with the Mass General, and now Dana Farber will be joining that partnership, and that'll be announced in the next couple of weeks. And a program for high-risk mothers that we're doing with the Brigham, and pediatric subspecialty clinics that we're doing with Mass General that are out of Emerson. So a whole range of things that bring world-class care to our community so people don't feel like they have to go downtown. They can get the kind of care they would get downtown out here at Emerson. And, you know, moving away from the heritage that Emerson has, which is a perfectly lovely one, but one that's not very helpful in this day and age, which is a quaint community, as a quaint cottage hospital, most of it used to be called. And they were really way stations, you know, before there was Route 2. And we have done lots of surveys and focus groups with people living in towns around here. People really want, they want the high touch, they want the personal touch of an Emerson, which is very high. but they don't want that. They don't want to give up anything to get that. They don't want to forego the best technology, the best positions, et cetera. And so we have to be high tech. We have to keep pace with the downtown hospitals for the things that we do. We don't do everything with downtown hospitals, but for the 90% of things that where we overlap with what the downtown hospitals do, and it is about 85 to 90%, we need to do it identically. We need to do it with the same technology, the same nurses with the same skills, doctors with the same training. And then people expect more personal care because they're local community health, but not downtown, mm-hmm. for a certain amount of personality is expected.
The Bethke Cancer Center has certainly given patients the relief almost of not having to go into Boston treatment.
Right. It is relief. I think that's the right word. It's very hard if you have to get chemotherapy or radiation therapy several times a week. It's a nightmare for lots of people to have to go downtown. To be able to do that jointly with the Mass General gives people a high level of comfort and satisfaction. It's a very cutting-edge program. With the Dana-Farber affiliation, will now be providing all the same clinical protocols that are available, research protocols, investigational treatments that are available at Dana-Farber, which means we're really on the cutting edge nationally, right at Emerson. So that's just tremendous. And we want to continue replicating that model in different clinical areas.
The Bethke Cancer Center opened when?
About 4 years ago, 3 years ago, thereabouts. And it's been very busy. We see between 30 and 40 patients a day for radiation, all of whom have been done elsewhere in the past. And more importantly, we're able to give comprehensive care now to patients. There's no modality of cancer care for 90%+ of cancer patients that we can't manage completely at Emerson. So provide really state-of-the-art, modern, and comprehensive cancer care here. You know, there's certain things that we don't do. We wouldn't do pediatric cancers here. We really want to do the children's hospital. But for most everything, we can handle it at a very high level. So that's the model that we're increasingly using. The other thing we're doing a lot of is trying to expand geographically into the towns that are growing here. We built a center in Westford. It's very busy. Mm. Right in the middle of Westford. And we're just now opening a center in Groton with physicians and lab radiology and pathology and other skills. One thing that Emerson needs to keep on doing is growing. We have a lot of fixed costs as we all of the institutions like hospitals and be just as busy as we can possibly be. And we have been busy. If we can stay busy and keep growing and get the payments back to where they need to be, that's really going to be the solution to the financial piece of this. And being bigger means being more relevant to our community, which is what we're here to be. You know, if we can have fewer people feeling like they have to be conquered for their care, we're really meeting our mission fundamentally. So the two, there's a kind of happy coincidence of what we need to do to stay financially stable, what we need to do for the public health, for the right thing to do for the public health and for the residents of the towns that we serve.
Could you state the dozen or so towns that you do serve now?
Well, it's all the ones you expect, pretty much. It's Acton, Carlisle, Lincoln, Sudbury, Concord, Bedford, Lexington, Foxborough, Harvard, now moving a bit farther out,
sure.
to Groton, Littleton.
Mm-hmm. Now, certain community hospitals were actually forced to close.
Yeah, there have been some closures mm-hmm. over the last 10 years, and there's been a whole batch of them in the last year or two. None around here. We do have a large group of physicians from the Shova Hospital Air, who are going to be moving most of their business to Emerson starting shortly.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be moving into our center in Groton. That it was not our purpose to imperil the Shoba Hospital. It may be one effect of this. This group came to us, actually, because they were concerned that the Shoba wasn't growing the way they were as a physician group, as their seventh physician practitioner. And have been hearing good things about Emerson. And then when we built our center, that was, I guess, the last straw for them. They decided to come see if they'd be interested in switching hospitals. But of course, they're going to continue to use Neshoba, but they're aiming to send at least half of their business or more over here. So that'll strengthen Emerson. It'll strengthen us in those towns, which are growing very fast in the north and west of here. And also, just, you know, just bring more needed business to the hospital. Our mission for everybody, our old traditional core towns.
How dependent are you on development fundraising?
It's not been a huge part of the formula for us until recently, and I think what you're seeing now is more and more hospitals really raising the level of commitment to fundraising. We're doing a capital campaign right now to raise $8.7 million for the hospital, and we're over $6 million there to a pledge as of this week. So we're doing great, and we haven't even begun the public phase of the campaign. We've been dealing mostly with board members, incorporators, and physicians, people closer into the hospital, but we're going to be going into a fully public phase later this summer to get us over the top. I think it's going to be extremely important in the future for hospitals. I think that the philanthropy is going to be a main source of. It may have to be relied upon to make up that difference for us increasingly, and it'll mean much more intense effort. And we have a fairly sizable staff here, but it's not huge. It's three or four people working on it. I think if you look at hospitals our size, possibly a staff of 6 or 7 really much more ambitious campaigns. You could be in what amounts to almost perpetual capital campaign. And then we have routine fundraising. We raise about $1 million a year between, depending on how you count the money, between about $650,000 a year. Some of it comes into quests that you don't get until somebody dies and it gets complicated. But that's been going on for many years. We've seen a good couple of percentage increase every year in that amount. But I'd like to get that amount to $2 or $3 million every year. So we're working routinely. Not as a special capital campaign, but just as routine annual giving to the hospital. But to do that, we'll take a much bigger effort. But you're hearing that more and more from hospitals all over the country. To really make that a central piece of what they do. We have a budget of about, just to give you a sense of proportion, about $110 million a year. So we have our philanthropy kind of typically might be about $1 million. So you can see that it's been very, very much appreciated, and it makes a big difference, but it's not been a huge amount of part of the pie.
Speaking with various physicians in Massachusetts, they feel that the doctors' salaries or their income have not risen proportionately to cost, and that sometimes the hospitals can receive their share at the expense of the doctors. So would you comment?
I don't sense too much of that, actually. I don't sense much of that sort of lead in that you weren't getting it when you're getting it. There's a big problem with physician compensation in Massachusetts. We're starting to see a lot of doctors leaving the state. Harvard Medical School is seeing more and more doctors who are saying, no, I'd love to be on the faculty at Harvard, but I just got an offer from the University of Texas, and I got 3 kids to put into school. I can buy a house with 6 bedrooms for $300,000, you know, and if you hear that from people downtown, and we experience it to some extent being a very expensive set of towns around here. It's been a very hard thing for doctors, with only a few exceptions, which I'd say surgery and a couple of other subspecialties. doctors' incomes really have dropped like a rock over the last 10 or 15 years. And doctors are, you know, at the same time that you're seeing all the high-tech entrepreneurs getting rich, you know, the only doctors who are going to be happy in the future are doctors who didn't get anything to be rich, you know. You do see some doctors in, now in middle age and older who I think feel like they sort of got a raw deal and sort of they signed up for one thing and then it turned out to be something different. Younger physicians tend to be much clearer in my, what I've observed, you know, physicians under 40, about, or 35 to 40, about sort of why they're getting into the profession and aren't as, they're as angry as a group, more of a sense of, you know, I could have done something else, but I really want to work with people, I want to be a doctor, I know I'd make a good income, but I'd never be like the guy who owns the, you know, the dot-com company or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are big differences generationally in that. And then you have doctors who are, you know, in their, you know, 60 or over, who were around when medicine was still paying well, and they've done just fine, and are retiring happy with their retirement, sort of 4,500. So it's a very mixed, kind of complicated topography. But no, I think doctors are fighting hard, and we have to fight for them, because if we have doctors leaving the state, it is going to hurt the hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, if all the radiologists decide that they, you know, that they can't make a living around here, we're going to be in big trouble, or any other specialty. So the hospital has an interest in making sure that the health plans and Medicare and others pay sufficiently, particularly if you live in an area as expensive as this. We can't have doctors living, you know, 45 minutes away from here. To make a plane or something. They got to live somewhere fairly close to here, most of them. And that means that they have to have an income that allows them to raise a family and to live around here.
Running a hospital, one has to look at the bottom line, and business practices apply to medicine now.
They always have.
Yeah.
I mean, they always have. You know, we're a not-for-profit hospital. We don't have shareholders. We don't need to be making huge profit margins. We just need to make enough to keep this place able to reinvest in technology and stay modern. And meet the salary needs of 1,350 people who work here. It's a pretty big, you know, employer.
Largest, probably, in the town.
Certainly one,
yeah,
of the, one of the biggest in town, maybe the biggest. And we, my train of thought here.
Running it as a business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, what's interesting is hospitals are businesses, and they're also not businesses. And they always will be both. And that's like the zen of this work, you know, is that they're both at the same time. They're, you know, we don't exist to make money. We exist to provide health care, and we only need to make money to meet that mission. So that's because we're fundamentally not a business, except we have all the elements of a business. We have employees, we have capital needs, we have budgets, we have suppliers, and the whole bit. So you have to keep at all times sort of a split mind about both. And that's one of the things I find very interesting about this job, actually. The fellow who runs the Mass General, Sam Thier, who's one of the preeminent physicians in the United States, interns clinically, talks about hospitals in a more cool-eyed business way than I'm used to. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's a world-famous clinician, so you never know where it's going to come from. Sometimes it's the clinical people who are the most business-like, and sometimes it's the business people who worry the most about quality of care, and it's fascinating.
Your own background is a business.
No, my background is in public health. I learned business along the way, mm-hmm. and got a good training in Berkeley in finance, in healthcare finance, but it was fundamentally in epidemiology and public health. Mm-hmm. You know, not clinical medicine, but it's a lot closer to clinical medicine than it is to business.
Are you the president of the Mass Hospital Association?
I'm going to be in a couple of months. Yeah.
And what would that involve?
a fair amount of my time for a year. It's a great honor. It's the association that represents all the hospitals in Massachusetts, and I've been fairly active, obviously, the last couple of years. Got nominated a year or two ago to be president-elect and president's ceremony. And so I'll be, you know, public spokesman for hospitals in the state and doing a lot of lobbying and a lot of public speaking, which I already feel a fair amount of already on behalf of not only Emerson, but now during this year, sort of hospitals in general, and going down to Washington and meeting with people there, and a lot of work in there is a lot on the table right now, legislatively.
What are the lobbying efforts of the legislators? What kind of dialogue is that?
Well, it's, you know, trying to help them understand what's really going on for hospitals and how important they are, and if we're not crime dealing with these real serious structural problems right now that we need to look at the issues of hospitals and have them gone under recently to really get people's attention. Also, the hospitals that are remaining in the state have never been busier. So for having to be as busy as we are and then be losing money creates a real paradox, and one that really pointedly for anybody who really is paying attention to. There's something fundamentally wrong here. That's one thing 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when there was a big oversupply of hospitals and beds, people would say, oh, you know, you guys are fat and inefficient, and there are too many of you anyway, and having over 30 of you went under, then those that remain would be fine. Well, you know, we have had the future, and here we are. And mangled poke over there. And hospitals are very busy. There are fewer of them, and they run very efficiently. I'm very self-confident when I talk to them, just like the brothers, because we're not fat at all. We're very lean. Some would say too lean. And still, we're barely in black right now. And in any month, at risk of going back into red. We're actually, by being in the black, doing better than most hospitals in Massachusetts. 60+% of hospitals in Massachusetts are still in the red this year, so far this year. So at least we're not in that comfortable.
Are you finding the legislators receptive? Do they really understand the issue?
Well, some do and some don't. Yeah. Part of this job, my job as Emerson CEO and also my MHA have is educating people. I mean, hospitals get a good hearing, usually. I certainly always do with our state reps, because we are big employers and we're critical public services and we are capable of going. We're not government entities that are going to get bailed out or something. We're private, not-for-profit companies that are perfectly capable of failing. And getting that, the reality that the potential urgency of the situation that people, some get it right away, some take a while, but we're fighting very hard right now to reform the thing called the uncompensated care pool, where hospitals, in certain way, that hospitals in areas with less uncompensated care, fewer people who need charity care, help subsidize the hospitals that do have more charity care. And there's no problem, I have no problem with that cross-subsidy. I think it's important to kind of socialize the care of the uninsured. The problem is that the state, in most states in the country, the state takes the lion's share of that responsibility, not the hospitals themselves. In Massachusetts, the hospitals pay most of the cost of this uncompensated care pool. And it's been a terrible burdensome debt tax, essentially, for us. We're paying almost $4 million a year to this pool. We probably provide in the form of uncompensated care much, much less than that. And we see everybody who comes to this hospital, everybody who's seen who comes to the emergency room, nobody's ever turned away. But for us to be losing money at the time that we're losing money, we're fairly flat, we're paying that amount because the state won't do what 48 other states are already doing. It's really following. We've got a big push going on right now, between now and June, this year to try to get legislation passed, but it would take a huge burden off of hospitals like Emerson.
I was not aware until recently how much of a disadvantage medical costs were in Massachusetts.
Well, they're high, and the reason was described in that article with Dan Blow, which is the main reason is not that hospitals don't run efficiently in Massachusetts. We compare very favorably either community hospital to community hospital, or teaching hospital to teaching hospital, compare favorably nationally. But the percentage of people who use teaching hospitals is so much higher in Massachusetts, three times as high as it is anywhere else in the country, and their costs will always be higher per course, even if they're efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They're just different creatures than community hospitals. They have other things they have to do that raise their costs. That's something that may eventually be addressed. There's been talk about putting together health plans, as described in that article today, that give incentives, disincentives for people to use teaching hospitals for things that you don't need a teaching hospital for. Examples given, we're getting gallbladder taken out or getting a hip replaced. And that might work. The question is, what do people want? And if people want access to the Mass General and the Great Women, Beth Israel for every little thing, the marketplace is going to rule. It is ruling right now. People want to go wherever they can.
Teaching hospitals are beginning to come with outlets in the suburbs, aren't they?
Yeah, there's some of that going on. You've got Mass General. Yeah, and that's what Professor Gary goes about, that there's more and more moving out in the suburbs going on.
As I said before, we've
managed so far to resist being eaten alive by the downtown hospitals. Part of it's by working with them so that we're not fighting them. It's helped.
This particular community has become home to more and more health institutions, particularly with a aging population.
Right, we've got continuing care, adult communities. People can get different levels of health care as they get older. And there's a tremendous new industry, and it's going to keep on growing of these kinds of communities. Pretty great. And they're expensive, typically. Even the least expensive of them are pretty expensive. A pretty natural thing for a town like Concord or Lincoln, Carlisle.
So you have...
We'll see more and more of those, I'm sure.
So you have Sunrise, you have New England Deaconess,
right,
with the Newbury Court,
right,
but now you have Volunteers of America. Are you Walden Healthcare? Do you kind of all interact with the hospital?
Yeah, we work with them a lot. We're always having to coordinate services with them, and patients frequently come from Newbury Court to Emerson and then back to Newbury Court. Frequently, every day, all day long, we're having to find placements for people in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital has its own nursing home, nursing service, skilled nursing level service on the sixth floor of our Wheeler building, called the Transitional Care Unit, which is for patients who don't need acute care anymore. They're well enough, they could be at a lower level of care, and they need a week to 2 weeks of rehab.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's sort of the bridge either back to home or to a longer-term care unit at a skilled nursing unit, or at a senior housing center, or wherever people may be. But yeah, we spend, we have social workers here working on case management, helping to figure out sort of what's the plan for Mrs. Jones next. She's going to be leaving in a couple of days, and we work very closely with, we also have a big home care service. We see about 60,000, 70,000.
Mm.
Well, 67,000 visits a year, something like that, 80,000. So we're out there in the communities. Yeah, 80,
the home health nurses' days and others in their cars all day long, seeing people in their houses.
Now, the hospice program is still...
We have a busy hospice program, and that's really part of home care, since most of that hospice is done in the home. There are hospice programs that are hospital-based, where people actually can come and be in a hospice bed overnight for a period of time. Those are a little less common. We don't do that presently, but we have a very busy hospice service. And of course, with a growing cancer service, we end up with cancer and hospice are closely linked. A lot of what ends up in hospice is cancer, not entirely, of course, but a good piece of it. And it's been a wonderful service, and just a tremendous way to meet the needs of our patients, of our community.
Well, 100 years ago, when people were talking about the turn of the 20th century, there was no Emerson Hospital, and so here we thought we'd document what the hospital was like now.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.